The following podcast is brought to you by Radio Southland and New Zealand On Air. Radio Southland is a community access media station based in Invercargill, New Zealand. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, radiosouthland.org.nz, for our contact details.
What's your favourite piece of playground equipment? And why is it your favourite? If you've got an answer, then you're in the right place, because welcome to The Playful City on Radio Southland, 96.4 FM. I'm Dr. Play, your guide to discovering playful ideas, curious adventures, and inspiring stories from Invercargill and beyond. Just a quick plug, New Zealand is hosting the International Play Association World Conference in Christchurch this November 2nd to 5th. If you want to attend, sponsor, or just get more info, you can head to ipachristchurch2026.com. Can't wait to see you there. So in the previous episode, I was talking about how people who listen to the podcast might think I'm kind of anti-play for a guy who's called Dr. Play, because of sometimes I'm bagging on playgrounds and safety standards and things like that. I actually really enjoy a good playground. It's just sometimes they're not that good. Or put another way, because I work in play, I'm always looking for improvements. It's kind of like, you know, when I was at drama school, I couldn't watch plays or films without thinking about what I didn't like and what could have been better. So I thought I'd better tell you about some playground design aspects and different pieces of play equipment and things that I think are great. And just a word of note before I do, this is not a playground design guide that I'm kind of running through. There's lots of those that speak to really important play affordances, the types of experiences of play that are made available, the sort of important supporting amenities or layout, things around accessibility and inclusion. I'm not discounting or ignoring any of that, but that's not really the focus of the things I'm going to discuss today. They're more around the kind of feel and options that I just enjoy and have seen my kids and others enjoy. So first off, I love what they call clusters. In playground safety standard language, a cluster is two or more separate pieces of equipment designed to be in close proximity to each other to provide some kind of movement sequence, some continuity needed for the play activity. So the simplest example is a trail of stepping stones. They're each an individual detached piece, but they are meant to be installed together in a sequence. And so there's lots of, I guess, what are now traditional playgrounds where they have all the pieces of equipment are spaced out for the purpose of the fall zones, so you're not going to knock into each other. With this concept of clustering, that rule doesn't apply. And so good designers and landscape architects can create both the literal items, design the items, but then also the layout and use that effect really well. And it creates much more creative movement potential that I love, I guess, with my parkour background. So that makes for some really great ground as lava type experiences, because you can actually move from piece to piece and there's variety in that movement rather than getting locked into the only way to move from this platform to that platform is to use the overhead zipline-y thing or the monkey bars or something. I also love a gimmick, and I know some people hate it, but, you know, without novelty of some kind, there's a risk of cookie cutter spaces. And when you're working in a council and you can see some of the budget constraints, and there's not always the opportunity to have a landscape architect, so you've got no designer, so all you're doing is picking items off a shelf. And so when a playground is able to speak to the local history or unique people, storytelling of some kind, even just animals or buildings or areas of industry that matter to the region, those things are cool to me. And sometimes that ends up in a big investment, and you go into the sort of destination-sized playground to tell a really big, rich story. But sometimes it's just like the facade of something that happens to be shaped like an animal, because that animal is is native to that area or something. So, and actually, this kind of segues into the next item, which is when often in more rural spaces and older townships and things, where old vehicles that get repurposed is a winner for me, like boats and tractors. But it, especially if it's real ones. So I'm not saying just playground equipment that happens to be shaped like them, because there has been that movement towards that, maybe because there's so many moving parts to a real vehicle that it wouldn't pass the same safety standards for playground design. So I love it when they take a boat and they strip it out, but you can still be like, yeah, I'm driving the boat. And it's, you know, it doesn't necessarily have the same kind of staying power for everyone or the highest level of play value, but I've hardly ever seen a kid turn down the opportunity to pretend to be the driver, because they, my kids always want to sit in my lap and drive the car and do those kinds of things. So, yeah, I've seen lots of other types of play equipment repeatedly ignored, but I've hardly ever seen one of those things ignored. Then I like when a designer has had, like, so there's a situation where, now I'm going to bag on developers, where developers give councils the worst bit of land. That bit is going to, we're going to, that crappy weird shaped piece there, we're going to give you that as the recreation reserve, and we're going to use all the prime real estate for the high quality houses, and that, so we can get more sales and more money out of it. But when you get a weird piece of land and you have specific constraints because of the shape of that land, you know, the gradient of it, or just whatever the land is made of, when you're stuck in that place and you actually adapt the play to the space, you can end up with some really, really cool things. If you just take, if you do it the opposite way and you make the land adapt to the play feature, I don't think you usually get the best result. So just have something, a flat piece of land, is harder to be as creative with. And then here's an interesting one, I think. When I'm at a place like a zoo or some kind of animal reserve place, and it's got goats, and it's not just this, but this is the trigger for me. If it's got goats, it always bums me out that the goat's playground that looks super fun and all the things they can climb on, and then I'm standing outside looking at the goats having a great time, but the only great time I can have is looking at the goats enjoy their playground, and there's nothing for me to play or my kids to play and climb and jump and scramble over. And so, we're just stuck walking around and looking at them. And I'd argue that other than touching and feeding the animals, a lot of kids would also like to copy them. You know, my kids are always cats or dogs or monkeys or some kind of animal at some point in the day. And so I like when zoos create an interactive space that allows you to mimic the animals that you're looking at and playing alongside them, I think is kind of funky. And yep, you could probably do it pretty gimmickly and pretty kind of stock standard, just slap the piece of playground equipment there. But you could also do some pretty creative and clever stuff that I think is cool. Kind of like the kind of adaptation to constraints component, but a play, when you're thinking about the landscaping of a play space, I've always really appreciated a space that kind of looks like a garden. Usually that's a win. It's like the concept of placemaking. And so if you're not familiar with placemaking, I've heard it described like this. So, well, first of all, it's an urban design approach. And essentially, if a homemaker is someone who turns a house into a home, then a placemaker turns a space into a place. And so another way of thinking about it is turning a public space into what feels like a living room. And so that is something that tends to be a lot more inviting than somewhere that maybe it's clean and sterile, like clean and polished and modern looking, but sterile and doesn't feel like home. And so when you can create something that makes it feel homey in some way, and I think in this playground scenario, by turning it into like a garden, like a front yard or a backyard, then that adds the sort of sensory experience and this feel that makes you feel at home. And so it's not necessarily a full nature play type experience, but there'll be seasonal changes as well that adds to the appeal and the change from month to month. And so I think if you're comparing a playground that's very much designed completely with equipment from a supplier versus something that's landscaped and is thinking about the rest of the landform and the other adjoining aspect of the space is really important. And then that kind of brings me also then into loose parts. So some of that can be those natural features, like sand and pebble play, and, you know, alongside the more fixed things like rocks and trees. But you can also add things like junk materials. And while I've never had the opportunity to be at a real adventure playground, that's like a, you know, curated, well, not curated, but a staffed junkyard. But any loose parts play experience I've seen or engaged with at schools and at pop-up events, they're so rich with that self-directed opportunity, and I love the creativity that comes out of those spaces that you can't get by the fixed equipment that kind of tells you how to use it. And I guess just across the board, variety and novelty in a large destination playground, when it's aiming to cater to lots of visitors at once, it makes sense to have lots of different options. And so that's why a lot of your destination playgrounds are usually held in high esteem. People love that because there's so many options that you can explore. So thumbs up for that as well. But also it makes sense in some of those spaces to have multiple similar options because not everyone can swing at once. So you don't just have one swing, you've got multiple swings, for example. And so those double ups aren't really redundant. But in a smaller space, when you have got redundancy, then it feels a bit silly. But then if you had a playground that was every different type of seesaw that you could possibly think of, all of a sudden that becomes novel and interesting again. And I haven't seen that, by the way, but I would definitely visit the place that has all of the different seesaws and different configurations. Yeah, that would be cool. Then, you know, multi-generation playgrounds that thoughtfully include opportunities for a range of age groups. We've got almost kind of tween kids and a toddler, and we're parents who like to play as well, so having a mix of options for those ages without being explicit about it sometimes, without saying this is the kids one and this is the adults one, this is only for toddlers, whatever it is, that's a win for our family at least. I also love either no signs in a playground or sight, because I don't think people care, I don't think people read them, it's just a kind of a tick box exercise for councils, but signs that welcome play instead of try and control it. So something like play on the grass instead of keep off the grass is really neat. I like that. And then lastly, there are new ideas being generated all the time. Designers are coming up with all sorts of funky ideas. And one of the ones I saw in the news and in the paper recently, I think it's called the Cliff Rider. And it's like a playground version of Vierleppen, which is the I've probably butchered the name, but that's the Dutch canal jumping sport. That's kind of like pole vault, but you're going across the canal instead of up over the bar. And but there's some older equipment types as well that, while phased out in lots of cities, we still have in Invercargill. Like, I never saw rocking horses or carriage swings. We've also got lots of maypole spinners and things like that, and I think that's cool. And just before I finish, actually, I'm going to give a wee plug here. It's not playgrounds as such, but parkour parks. I've been involved in designing a whole bunch of these around the country. And we're designing certain kind of movements and ideas within them, but they're so much more open-ended. And so I think lots of people who haven't even done parkour, not even thinking about parkour, come to a parkour park and love it because it's not telling you how to move through the space. You make the decisions yourself. And so I really value that. So that's just a few thoughts about some playground styles and things that I give a thumbs up to. But I'd be really interested to know what ticks the boxes for you. That's it for today. Your fortnightly play challenge is just simple. Go and play at a local playground and appreciate it. Get out there, explore a little, and remember, life's more enjoyable when you make time for play. You've been listening to the Dr. Play podcast on Radio Southland, 96.4 FM. Catch it on radiosouthland.org.nz, Facebook, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the Access Media NZ app by selecting Radio Southland.
The preceding podcast was brought to you by Radio Southland with the support of New Zealand On Air. Their funding of accessmedia.nz makes these podcasts available. To find similar programs by other stations involved, go online to accessmedia.nz.